Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Monday, the 7th day of March, year of our Lord, 2011. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Well, this is the first day of my new show here at Republic Broadcasting, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Looking forward to this show, looking forward to getting to know all of you and bringing on board new guests and guests that I've visited with a lot in the past. This will be a lot of fun for all of us, I'm sure. It will be a live call-in show. We have a very capable engineer on duty, and that's always great. And what's talk radio without guests and callers? Not much fun, especially for the host. Anyway, let's go straight to the markets. I like to do a market report every morning, Monday through Friday. Oil futures this past Friday, Brent crude oil for April delivery closed at $115.97 for April delivery. Dow Jones Industrial Averages this past Friday closed down $88.32 at $12,169.88. Right now in London, gold is trading up $15.33 at $1,442.90, and silver is trading up $1.17 an ounce at $36.63 an ounce. Got some funny stories here for you. I'd like to start out the morning with a funny story or two. This is by written by a woman named Janice. She says, recently when I went to McDonald's, I saw on the menu you could have an order of either 6, 9, or 12 chicken McNuggets. I asked for half a dozen McNuggets. The teenager said, we don't have half a dozen nuggets. You don't? I replied. We only have 6, 9, or 12, was the reply. So she ordered half dozen nuggets. But can I order 6? That's right. So she shook her head and ordered the 6 McNuggets, and she couldn't order a half dozen McNuggets. Break coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Monday, the 7th day of March, year of our Lord, 2011. I was just thinking how the host that used to have this time slot was R.J., and now you've got J.R. It's kind of an unusual thing, isn't it? Got another funny story here. Several years ago, we had an intern who was none too swift. One day, she was typing and turned to a secretary and said, I'm almost out of typing paper. What do I do? The secretary told her, just use a copier machine paper. With that, the intern took her last remaining blank piece of paper, put it in a photocopier, and proceeded to make 5 blank copies. Pretty scary. Okay. Second hour today, we're going to have Alexander Bachman. I had Alexander as a guest on my Sunday show several times in the last month or so. He is a journalist who lives in Mexico, and we will have some interesting things to talk about. Got an update here on the religion of peace, also called Islam. This is from, I got this off Stan Dale's website, AINA, that's Alpha India, NovemberAlpha.org. Assyrian International News Agency. Dateline the 5th of this month. The headline is, nearly 4,000 Muslims attack Christian homes in Egypt and torch the church. A mob of nearly 4,000 Muslims has attacked Coptic Christian homes this evening in the village of Seoul, Atfif in Helwan Governorate, 30 kilometers, it's about 15 miles from Cairo, and torched the Church of St. Mina and St. George. There are conflicting reports about the whereabouts of the church pastor, Father Yosa, and 3 deacons who were at the church. Some say they died in the fire, and some say they're being held captive by the Muslims inside the church. Witnesses report the mob prevented the fire brigade from entering the village. the army, which has been stationed for the last 2 days in the village of Bromil, 7 kilometers from Seoul, initially refused to go into Seoul, according to the officer in charge. When the army finally sent 3 tanks to the village, Muslim elders sent them away, saying that everything was in order now. A curfew has been imposed on the 12,000 Christians in the village. And here we get to the religion of peace part of it here. This incident was triggered by a relationship of between 40-year-old Coptic Christian Eshaf Iskander and a Muslim woman. Yesterday, a reconciliation meeting was arranged between the relevant Coptic and Muslim families, and together with the Muslim elders, it was decided that Eshaf Iskander would have to leave the village because Muslims torched his house. It gets better. The father of the Muslim woman was killed by his cousin, by her cousin, it should be, because he did not, The father of the Muslim woman was killed by his cousin because he did not kill his daughter to preserve the family's honor, which led the woman's brother to avenge the death of his family by killing the cousin. The village Muslims blamed the Christians. It just keeps getting better. The Muslim mob attacked the church, exploding 5 to 6 gas cylinders inside the church, pulled down the cross and the domes, and burnt everything inside. Activist Rami Kamal of the Katab Bataba Coptic Advocacy called U.S.-based Coptic Hope Satellite TV and sent an SOS on behalf of the Coptic Christians in Seoul Village, as they are presently being attacked by the mob. He also said that no one is able to contact the priest and the deacons inside the burning church, and there is no answer from their mobile phones. Coptic activist Waji Yakub reported that the mob had broken into Coptic homes and has called on Coptic Christians to leave the village. Terrorized Coptic Christians have fled and some hidden homes of Muslim neighbors, he added. Witnesses said the mob chanted Aluha Akbar and vowed to conduct their morning prayers on the church plot after raising it. The religion of peace. So we have the cousin of the father of this Muslim woman murdering the father because the father would not murder his own daughter. So the correct thing and the proper thing, according to Allah, is to murder the father of the young lady who was dating the Christian. What a bizarre, freakish, dangerous religion. The religion of peace that our president thinks is just dandy. Okay, this is a live call-in show, and I got my caller screen up here, ladies and gentlemen. The call number is 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. I know there's a lot of new people listening that have not heard me before. My complete bio is at my website, thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com. I'll give you a quick run through of my bio, as I frequently tell people. The U.S. Army Intelligence School took my 19-year-old pile of mush brain in 1967 and made it into something useful. They made it into a research tool. I did a 3-year tour of duty in the U.S. Army 1967 to 1970, including a tour of duty in Vietnam with psychological warfare where I was an intelligence analyst, and a tour of duty with U.S. Army Special Forces at Fort Bragg where I was also an intelligence analyst. I ended my tour of duty with the military, got my degree as a legal assistant. Shortly after that, in the fall of 1973, I was recruited to become a homicide detective for the state of Missouri. I investigated my first murder the fall of 1973. I've investigated a lot of murders the past 38 years, and I'm about to reactivate another homicide that I started work on 5 years ago. A local cold, well, it's about 7 years old now, a local cold case homicide. I've done all kinds of investigative work in the private sector, also as a private investigator, private detective, working on civil matters, up to the highest dollar value civil case I've worked on in my career so far has been $100 million at stake. I was working for the Isle of Capri Casino. They were being sued by Jefferson County, Missouri for $100 million. And they settled out of court. That was an interesting assignment. Met some really neat people along the way in that assignment, and of course the hundreds of others I've had these past 38 years doing investigative work in the private sector and working for the public defender as a young man working homicides and other criminal cases. Along the way, I managed to get married and have a beautiful daughter, have several beautiful grandchildren, and be active in the community, involved in various civic organizations. I became a radio talk show host in the winter of 1995, starting out with WGNU 920 on the dial in St. Louis, Missouri. And I've been on board here with Republic Broadcasting. I think this is year number six, if I'm not mistaken. I believe I've been with Republic longer than most of the hosts. Well, I know that for a fact. Doing a weekend program these past 6 years or so. And now we've got this daily show, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, Central Time. So it's going to be a change and some fun for me, and I know I'm looking forward to it, and I know my regular listeners are looking forward to also the extra time we'll have to visit with each other. I've come across a lot of interesting things along the way. One of my major focuses is preparedness in general, preparedness to get ready for most anything that might be coming along our way, whether it be earthquakes or hurricanes or typhoons or tornadoes, floods, severe cold weather. Getting prepared is a good thing, and I help many, many people do that with my lectures and DVDs and so forth. Another thing that I do pay a lot of attention to is what we generically call earth changes. Our planet is going through dramatic earth changes, and it will continue to become more dramatic as these next few months go by. I did come across an interesting fact this past summer, 2010, that fact being that the Gulf Stream has stopped. The Gulf Stream has stopped. When I wrote my paper, No Need for Panic, in the fall of 2005, publishing it in January 2006, I issued a warning then that the Gulf Stream was at risk of stopping, according to the scientists, 5 to 20 years in the future. Well, fast forward 5 years to June 12, 2010, and we verified, working with Dr. Luigiani Zangari this past summer, PhD scientist, that the Gulf Stream did in fact stop on June 12, 2010. Dr. Zangari works in Italy. He lives in Italy, and he works with other PhD scientists in North America and Europe, focusing exclusively on the Gulf Stream. That's what these men and women spend all their time on, is focusing on the Gulf Stream. When we were in touch with him, the third week of July this past year, 2010, he said he was pretty sure that the Gulf Stream had stopped the month before. He had more calculations to do, and it was less than a week later he verified that the Gulf Stream had in fact stopped on June 12th, 2010. What does that mean? Well, I'll give you just a quick outline of what that means. First of all, a quote from Dr. Zangari. The Gulf Stream is the pacemaker of the climate of the planet. Very strong statement. The Gulf Stream is the pacemaker of the climate of the planet. The Gulf Stream is warm water coming up from the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean up the east coast of Florida, past Georgia, past South Carolina. When it gets to Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, it starts going northeast. And there's the music. Call numbers 800-313-9443. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned.
Wake up, America.
Open the door.
It's time for us to face the truth with John Moore. Now, if you want to talk to John live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back with this day. Well, it is Monday, the 7th day of March, 2011. Anyway, I was talking about the Gulf Stream there before the break. The Gulf Stream, that river of warm water, now goes out past Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, a couple hundred miles, and just basically eddies out, does a loop-to-loop, and stops. What does that mean? Well, it means a lot of things. This current winter of 2010-11 is the worst winter in centuries in England, Ireland, Scotland, Norway, Russia, France, and so forth. Unprecedented cold, unprecedented levels of precipitation, snow and ice precipitation, unprecedented in modern times. But it means a lot more than that. Going back to the quote from Dr. Zangari, the Gulf Stream is a pacemaker of the climate of the planet. It had a regulating effect on the jet stream. Now, the jet stream is 200-mile-an-hour wind. It's 5 miles up, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right above your heads, wherever you might be, is the jet stream going 200 miles an hour. The regulating effect of the Gulf Stream on the jet stream caused the jet stream to behave in predictable fashion and give predictability to weather, especially for agriculture, especially for the growing of grains. That's gone. That is almost completely gone. And what we're having is unpredictable weather in the grain-growing areas all over the planet, leading to dramatically reduced harvest, which leads, of course, to dramatically increased prices. Look at the prices on the Chicago Board of Trades for grain futures. If you want to get an idea where this is headed, look at the futures prices on the Chicago Board of Trades for corn, wheat, rice, soybean, oats, spelt, barley, rye, so forth, all the grains. Corn and wheat are the two biggest volumes of grains, of course. Soybean's not far behind it. Rice, of course, is a major grain crop all over the planet. Grains are what feed the people. Grains are what feeds the animals. And these prices are growing up dramatically. And all you need to do, like I say, is go to the Chicago Board of Trades and look at those futures prices yourself, and you'll get an education. Along with that, we've got dramatic increases in the price of petroleum products, mostly due to greed. Mostly. There's no shortage of petroleum on this planet. This whole thing about peak oil is smoke and mirrors, ladies and gentlemen. Petroleum is the second most plentiful liquid on the planet, and we have, at current usage, several centuries worth, probably 3 to 5 centuries worth of petroleum on this planet, at least. If there's any shortage of anything, it might be refinery capacity. You can build a state-of-the-art refinery in 5 years or so. It takes that long. It's a major project. But if there's, like I say, if there's any shortage at all, it would be refinery capacity. So we're getting a double whammy this year. Double whammy of dramatic increases in food prices and a dramatic increase in petroleum prices, gasoline, diesel fuel, and so forth. When it comes to agriculture, petroleum products are involved at every step of the way. They make fertilizer from petroleum. They make insecticide from petroleum. Of course, diesel fuel runs the tractors. Propane gas dries out the grain once it's in the silos, in the bins, in the grain bins. So this calendar year, 2011, is going to see some dramatic things happen to our economy for the reasons I just stated. The Gulf Stream stopping is changing agriculture all over the planet. I reported this in January 2006, and of course now it's happened. That 5 to 20 year window, they said, ended up being 5 years. Probably because of the jet stream, of the British Petroleum oil spill. There's evidence based on some scientific experiments that have been done that the British Petroleum oil spill was the straw that broke a back of a very fragile, very weak, very much at risk Gulf Stream. That's very likely what happened. University level experiments, and these have been done and repeated with the same results. Take an 8 by 8 foot tank, 100 feet long, clear tank, and you put cold salt water in it, about 45 degrees or so, and you inject warm salt water at the other end at about 75 degrees or so, And that warm salt water will move through the cold salt water, forming a thermal barrier between the two layers of water. Move from one end to the other. When you introduce oil into the mix, the thermal barrier between the cold water and the warm water breaks down, and the two mix together, and that flow of water discontinues. Well, that's almost precisely what happened with the Gulf of Mexico and the British Petroleum oil spill, unfortunately. There's a lot of speculation about whether it was intentional or not. There's no evidence that it was. Certainly drilling where they shouldn't have been was intentional. I doubt that they intended to stop the Gulf Stream. I can't see what advantage or wonder there could possibly be out of that mess. Earth changes include other things besides the Gulf Stream stopping, of course. And we got a break. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the break. All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Monday, the 7th day of March. Well, Freeze Dry Guy does not yet have a March special. We expect we will be having one soon here, but we don't at the moment. He does have the food. These rumors about what's going on with freeze-dried food are get out of hand sometimes. Let's get a little facts under our belt here. Mountain House is the largest manufacturer of freeze-dried food. They, due to increased demand, they discontinued selling to the general public about 3 months ago. They also discontinued selling their newer and smaller suppliers. Their larger, older suppliers like Freeze Dry Guy, the distributors, are still getting inventory, and Freeze Dry Guy does have two warehouses full of food ready to package and delivering, ship to you. So he's got the food, and he's got some good bargains there. You check out his different situations he offers at his website, freezedryguy.com. There's a link to my website, thelibertyman.com. Now, if you want preferential treatment, expedited shipping, you need to speak to Freeze Dry Guy personally. Let him know you heard about his products on the John Moore Show. And then you can get expedited shipping. Toll-free number in California. Now, give them a couple of hours. It's only 5:30 in the morning out there in California. So give them a couple of hours. 866-404-3663. I say again, 866-404-3663. Okay, now if you want to have electricity at your home, at your farm, at your ranch, you may want to check out the nickel iron batteries from Zapworks. The nickel iron batteries from Zapworks. We now have a link up on my website, thelibertyman.com, down on the left side of the homepage there. We may move that logo so it's a little bit easier to see, but Zapworks. High quality nickel iron alkaline batteries that will last for decades. The original Edison batteries, which are nickel iron alkaline, are more than a century old, still going through daily charge discharge cycles. No human being has lived long enough to find out how long these things last. Typical lead acid batteries, high quality commercial lead acid batteries like they put in forklifts, they last 8 years. 10 years is really good. 12 years is pushing the limit for high-quality lead-acid batteries, which cost $300 to $500 a piece. Now, a good system for a home with lead-acid batteries could easily be $10,000 to $20,000, easily. And within 12 years, your $20,000 investment will be scrap metal. That's what it will be with the Zapworks batteries. Well, they do recommend. The manufacturer recommends changing out the electrolyte every 20 years. To put together a system, you need a way to generate the electricity, which can be a propane fire genset, diesel, gasoline, gensets, water power, steam power, wind power, solar power, lots of ways to make electricity. Feed that into your battery bank, run that through your inverter to get back to your 110 volts AC. And be sure you have a switching mechanism so you don't end up with the power grid going into your house the same time as your home-generated power. That would be a massive disaster. One of my neighbors did that, by the way, and he had to replace every appliance in his home, just about every appliance. So that's right there on my website, thelibertyman.com, along with my best-selling DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. Okay, earth changes. How about an earthquake? We got people leaving Christchurch because they're fearful of more earthquakes, these aftershocks, which are actually just more earthquakes. Looks like 65,000 out of 390,000 have left, terrified by incessant aftershocks, or because their workplace was affected, which means they don't have a place to work anymore. And let's see what it says here on page two. Estimates are that the tremor, which killed 166 people, devastated one-third of the buildings in central Christchurch, left 10,000 people homeless. Christchurch Mayor Bob Parker has warned that although the New Zealand government has underwritten all employees' wages for 6 weeks, prospects for CBD's 52,000 workers, I don't say what CBD is, 52,000 workers are uncertain. Hundreds of students at the University of Canterbury are being shipped to Australia to finish their studies, while thousands of school children have enrolled elsewhere, some as far away as Auckland, after some local schools warn they could be closed for a year. We're leaving for an indeterminate period, resident Kerry Kinsman said, who has to pass through police and army roadblocks just to leave her street. I'm sick of having earthquakes every day. In the center, right where we live, we feel them a lot. While the exodus is undeniable, experts believe it will only be temporary, with the city's location in Canterbury's rich farming heartland and proximity to the major port of Lyttelton still strong draw cards for business. Well, there's a scientist who's predicted he predicted the first earthquake that happened 2 weeks ago. He's predicting another one to take place in the next 10 days or so. He's predicted another earthquake. He's getting a lot of heat for that, but he did have a very accurate prediction on that first one. All right, here's an article from independent.co.uk, a mainstream British publication. The headline of the article is Adjust Your Compass Now, the North Pole is Migrating to Russia, by Guy Adams in Los Angeles. The subtitle of the article is Movement of the Magnetic North is Causing Problems for Aviation, Navigation, and Wildlife. Check my caller board here. Don't have any calls on hold, so the line's open if anybody does want to call. It sounds unlikely, but it's true. The magnetic North Pole is moving faster than at any time in human history, threatening anything, everything, from the safety of modern transport systems to the traditional navigation routes of migrating animals. Scientists say the magnetic north, which for two centuries has been in the icy wilderness of Canada, is currently relocating towards Russia at a rate of about 40 miles a year. The speed of its movement has increased by a third in the past decade, prompting speculation that the field could be about to flip, causing compasses to invert and point south rather than north, something that happens between 3 and 7 times every million years. And I think it's more frequent than that. But already the phenomenon is causing problems in the field of aviation. Tampa International Airport has just spent a month renumbering its three runways, which is common with those at most U.S. airports are identified using numbers that correspond to the direction and degrees they face on the compass. Everything had to be changed. It was a huge product, said Brenda George Hagen, a spokeswoman for the airport. Okay. Oh, we do have a caller here. Roger in Arkansas. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, John. Did you happen to notice the moon last night?
No, sir. What was the moon doing?
Well, it just is on its little crescent, but the crescent was like a U. It wasn't on the side. It was on the bottom.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I've never seen that before, have you?
No.
Oh,
that's why when I saw it last night, you know, I said, because I remember somewhere, you know, I listened to a lot of shows, I remember somebody talking about that. And, yeah, I called up several of my friends and said, go out and look at the moon.
Yeah. So, that's amazing. I'm not sure what that means.
Obviously, well, you should be able to see it tonight.
Well, I'll definitely take a look tonight. This is really bizarre.
Uh-huh.
okay. Well,
go
ahead.
It would seem, you know, in order for that to happen, I mean, you know, normally that cusp is on the edge, you know, on the right side, you know, as it gets bigger, and then on the left side as it wanes, you know. But last night, I mean, it was perfectly up and down. I mean, just, you know, like a
left
U.
Right, instead of side to side.
Yeah, I remember somebody saying something about, you know, I mean, basically it looks like horns now.
Well, you know, that's our shadow being cast on the moon.
Yeah.
And it's, something's very different. I'm no astronomer by any means, don't claim to be. I'll see if I can get Professor McCanny on the phone in the next day or two and get some clarification from him what's going on with us.
Yeah, it would kind of seem to indicate that we've had to tilt some.
Well, either the Earth has moved or the moon has moved. I really doubt that the sun has moved.
Yeah, I
doubt that would be
too.
On the moon. The moon's a lot smaller object, and it could move without us really knowing it except for that shadow being cast.
Well, another thing, you know, with all these volcanoes and earthquakes going on, I got out one of my geology books, physical geology, and I started reading about it, and I started thumbing through the pages. And I come across a very interesting one. They had the North American continent sitting at not quite 90 degree, you know, from what we see it today.
Really?
And basically it showed the equator passing through El Paso, Texas, going up and just pretty close to the northwestern shore of Lake Superior.
Really?
And the caption on it said that paleomagnetics determined that, you know, this was the way it set. And of course, they put a date on it 400 million years ago. But
I think we can
take the date with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
But it does show that at one point in history that, you know, we were setting different than we are now.
Well, it's a fascinating thing. And of course, we're, you know, those of us who study these things are aware of these things having happened in the past. It's not news to us.
Yeah, I've read pretty much, well, most of Manuel Velikovsky's books. I've read several of Jim McCanny's books. Just finished one by Zachariah Sitchin, that with the beginning of time.
Right. We just lost Zachariah this past fall. He died.
Yeah. Just got a couple of DVDs too. A friend of mine ordered them. One of them was is called A Talk from the Heart, and it was I think the 30th anniversary or 40th anniversary of the 12th Planet. Yeah, he was an amazing man. Well, I would have, there are a lot of them that I wish I would have been able to, you know, have a few, little conversation with.
Absolutely. I'm in touch with Zachariah's producer, and we're working, I'm not really part of it, but the producer is working on getting the full interview with Dr. Harrington released to the public. And they were working on that before Zachariah died. Now that he's died, of course, they're dealing with Zachariah's estate, and it's just become a logistical administrative nightmare dealing with all these other entities.
Yeah.
But it's about a full hour interview. What's on that DVD that I offer at my website, Are We Alone in the Universe, is only 10 minutes of that 1 hour interview.
Yeah. Yeah, we got that, well, I guess it's one that Are We Alone?
Are We Alone in
the
Universe?
Yeah, I just got that and watched it too. It was, most interesting. Now, I've heard one of these radio shows that's advertising two books from Emmanuel Velikovsky. One of them had to do with the Syrians, and I wrote down those things, and I don't remember what the other. Oh, the, the Dark Ages of Greece. They know that Ages of Chaos, you know, which after reading his first two books, I thought would be about, you know, the earth in chaos. But what it is about the fact that, you know, our history, you know, doesn't line up right.
Well, the history we're told doesn't line up with what really happened.
Right. Because he goes in there.
I've got Velikovsky's book.
Yeah, he in that, he basically says that the Egyptian queen, if I can get her name right, Hatshepsut, was basically the Queen of Sheba that went to see Solomon.
Right.
Because all the stuff that it talks about in the Old Testament, she's got on her, you know, murals and all the stuff they do, the carvings and the reliefs and stuff, you know. All these things that is mentioned in the Bible. And so that's what these other two books are supposed to be about, realigning history.
Right, right. You know. Fascinating stuff, isn't it, Roger?
Yeah. And I, you know, this was, now I forgot, let's see, I wrote it down, it was about a couple of weeks ago, we had a 5.7 in Greenbrier, and I, it was 11 o'clock at night, I was laying down on the couch, and, you know, everything was still and quiet, and I was listening to the radio, and all of a sudden I felt just a little bit of shake, and then it was a pause, and then a little bit, it wasn't any bigger, but it lasted longer.
You're talking about that one last Tuesday night?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's, you know, we're pretty far away, but I talked to, you know, some people that live, you know, just a little bit closer, you know, only a few miles closer. One lady said she had the dishes rattling in her china cabinet.
Well, we were feeling it. We felt it as far up here as far north as I am. I didn't myself, but one of my neighbors did feel it. So it was a pretty strong shake, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I figure if I'd probably been up walking around or something, I might not have felt it, you know, because it just, I mean, here it just wasn't that big. But, you know, lying still, you know, I felt the ground shake from explosions and bombs, but I had never felt one shake like that. And I knew right off the bat, I said, this has got to be an earthquake. And, you know, the next morning I started talking, oh, yeah, but it was a big one down in it was a Greenbrier.
Right, right. So how far away is that from you and mine?
I don't know, about 50, 60 miles, something like that.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I live not too far below you. I'm in the Ozark Mountains.
Right.
And, you know, I came here, I moved here about 12 years ago, and not for any of the reasons that you talk about now.
You figured this out before you even knew about me, didn't you?
Well, you know, it's amazing, a lot of people around here, how they happen to come to be here. You know, I had one guy that I know, he broke down here, and so he'd stayed. You know?
Really?
Most of the people...
His vehicle broke down and he stayed?
Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, just, you know, come here just because they're, you know, getting away from everything.
Right.
And that was, I moved up here from Orlando, Florida, you know, to get away from
people. Hold on, we got a break coming.
All right, sorry, I'll let you go.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Back after the break. Stay tuned.
Here's more of John Moore on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Monday, the 7th day of March, 2011. Well, we've got our special guest due to come on board here at the top of the hour, Mr. Alexander Bachman. A few more minutes of open lines here at Republic Broadcasting. The call number is 800-313-9443. Well, a new week ahead of us here, a week to do fun things, productive things, get out and get busy and do what needs to be done. I always look forward to Monday mornings and starting off the week with fresh projects and wrapping up existing projects. I know many of you feel the same way and look forward to the work week as much as I do. I look forward to every day. Life is fun. Life is a challenge. Life is just a never-ending learning process for myself. I enjoy learning new things every day of the of every week. And let's see, this week we'll be getting our situation squared away on this new program. That's what I'll be doing. That'll be a lot of my focus this week. Getting used to a new routine for this 7 to 9 time slot. It won't cause any dramatic changes in my lifestyle or what I do, just a little readjusting here and there. We got spring upon us here, and my home studio is in a separate building here from my main residence, so I have to walk down the hill, maybe 100 feet or so, to my home studio and get everything fired up. I got two computers and all my equipment that I need here to do my radio show. And pay attention to what's going on with the Earth changes. That's a never-ending process. My research team is scattered all over the planet, literally all over the planet. Men and women in Europe, North America, obviously, Australia, New Zealand. We had one of my regular listeners called in from Australia yesterday on my Sunday show. And that will be my last Sunday show yesterday, by the way, as far as I know. Unless something changes, I believe this past Sunday, yesterday, would have been my last Sunday show. So I'll be doing 10 hours a week here on Republic Broadcasting Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m., and getting to build a new audience, meet new folks that we haven't met before, and have a lot of fun here on Republic Broadcasting. In my opinion, Republic Broadcasting is certainly one of the top, if not the top, station when it comes to alternative media, Patriot Radio, as we call it. Mr. Stat Miller has done an excellent job putting together a fine list of hosts to host these shows. We always have excellent guests on Republic Broadcasting. A lot of fine advertisers, of course. Very well done website. It's a place where you can get up-to-date news at Republic Broadcasting at republicbroadcasting.org. Excellent, excellent website. And I will continue to do my research on Earth changes, keep up to date on what's going on with the Gulf Stream, volcanoes, earthquakes, bizarre violent weather events. One of my contacts that I had dinner with last night, he's very concerned about how fast things are moving forward. If I have a specific date that I can stand behind, I'll give that to you. Otherwise, I just refer to a time frame. I'll tell you what the Navy told their sailors in classified briefings and continue to tell them, as far as I know. Gentlemen, these events will happen in your lifetime. And there's our break. We should have our top of the hour break here, and Mr. Brockman coming on board. Stay tuned.